Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord Vishnu is spiritual, as verified by the Shastras. There is another spiritual potency known as Kshetrajna, or the living entity. The third potency, which is known as nescience, makes the living entity godless and fills him with fruitive activity. Srila Prabhupada's purport. So Prabhupada comments, in the Bhagavad Gita, in Sri Krishna's discourse on the Kshetra and Kshetrajna, it is clearly stated that the Kshetrajna is the living entity who knows the field of activities. The living entities in the material world are forgetful of their eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This forgetfulness is called avidya, or nescience. The avidya shakti, the avidya potency of the material world, provokes fruit of activity. Although this avidya shakti, material energy, or nescience, is also an energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is especially intended to keep the living entities in a state of forgetfulness. This is due to their rebellious attitude towards the Lord. Thus, although the living entities are constitutionally spiritual, they come under the influence of the potency of nescience. How this happens is described in the following verse that will be discussed, I guess, tomorrow. So there are three main topics to this verse. These are three shaktis, or potencies, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is referencing. Vishnu, or Parashakti, that's the internal potency of Krishna, the spiritual energy. Can also refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kshetrajna is the living entity, the jiva soul. That's you and me. And finally, avidya karma, or nescience, or godlessness, or Prabhupada also speaks about forgetfulness. So it's very important to understand what these energies or categories have in common, as well as what makes them distinct, what sets them apart. And for the next, let's see, 35 minutes or so, we will discuss these under some different headings. First, we can discuss the significance of these three classifications, or ontologies. And then we will talk about two examples of misunderstandings, or single ontology deviations. And then third, we can also discuss how bhakti is implied or implicit within these three classifications. So as we discuss these topics, any thoughts, reflections, realizations, questions that come to you, please note them down, and you can type them in the chat. And afterwards, Juan will share them with me, and we can discuss them further. So don't be shy with this. Do engage. It helps to deepen our understanding, our realization, our memory, remembrance of the time that you're investing now to hear this discussion or participate in this discussion. It will be deepened if you reflect and engage with the discussion and share. That's how we all learn together, we grow together. So let's begin then with the significance of these three classifications. Why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu referencing them? If we see reality in terms of these three ontologies, we see truth. That's the significance. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to this truth, tattva. Tattva is a Sanskrit word. It means that which is, or we have in English, that. When we point to someone, we say that. That computer, that house, that car, that person. So that refers to a thing or a substance or an existence. So here we have three classifications of that, three broad essential, if you know, essential categories of existence or tattva. And these are referred to as ontologies. So an ontology is a classification, and it's a higher order classification. You cannot go beyond the ontology. I mean, in principle, you can. Everything, we go to Krishna, Sarva Karana Karanam. But here, Lord Chaitanya is pointing out these three ontologies. His energies are understood in terms of these three classifications or categories. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to that or tattva, 4:34. He says, tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te gyanam gyaninas tattva, tattva, there it is, darshina. He says, just try to approach a spiritual teacher. Inquire from that teacher submissively and render service, pariprashna and seva. Engage in submissive inquiry and serve, do seva. This teacher will be able to give you spiritual knowledge because they are tattva darshi. They see the truth. They see that which is. And Lord Chaitanya is saying that which is to be seen in terms of these three classifications. That's the tattva darshi. So, do we have an example of seen in terms of these three classifications of tattva, the guru who sees and teaches in terms of these three? The wonderful example we have is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Krishna, because he's darkish in color. Dvaipayana, because he's born on an island. Vyas, because he has divided or categorized the Vedas. Vyasadev. For short, we say Vyas or Vyasadev. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn a story from Suta Goswami. This is the first canto, chapters 4 to 7. We hear a story about how Vyas came to write Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vyasa is introduced in chapter 4 of the first canto of the Bhagavatam as very despondent. And he's not sure why. He has this this dissatisfaction. And he doesn't know. He's unable to diagnose his lack of inspiration, his lack of vitality, lack of energy, lack of enthusiasm. And this is surprising because he's a rishi. Rishis are supposed to be self-satisfied, peaceful, shanta. He's a bhakta, he's a devotee. And so he's distressed. He doesn't have the diagnosis. And as he's sitting there in his ashram on the bank of the Sarasvati in Badri ashram, near to there's the hermitage also of Nara Narayana Rishi. Narayanam namaskritya naram chevan narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam muti dadet. This is a nice invocation meditation of Suta Goswami. I offer my obeisances unto, before speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer my obeisances unto Vyas, the author, unto Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, but also the river where he's meditating, unto Narayan Rishi, that they are the rishis who are there, it's the incarnation of the Lord who resides eternally, Badri Narayan, in that place where Vyas has his ashram. And so as he's there contemplating, he's done great work. He's divided the Veda. He's written Mahabharata all for the benefit of humanity, but he's not feeling good. He doesn't know why. He hears the sound of the Veena, the stringed instrument. Who is the player of that Veena? That is his guru, Narad Muni. And Narad Muni explains his condition to... Vyasa explains his condition to Narad Muni, who diagnoses him. He says, you have done great work, Vyas, but you have also caused great confusion. You need to mute somewhere. morality. There we are. So you've done great work, but you've also caused great confusion because you have given the Vedas. They're so broad, and they are, your explanation or your presentation is directed to so many different types of people, all of whom you have tried to accommodate. And it's confusing. Some people will think that the teaching of the Veda is impersonal liberation. Some will think that the purpose of the Veda is to do fruit of punya, fruit of activity, to be elevated to the heavenly planets. Some will understand the real purpose of the Veda is to awaken bhakti, to awaken pure love and devotion for Krishna. And so Vyasa, he says, you've done actually a disservice and you need to correct this by writing another book in which you exclusively explain Krishna bhakti, devotion to Krishna, as the main topic. So Narad Muni leads. Vyasa is very pleased, actually. He has received the diagnosis. He also has a course of action, what he must do. And he touches water to purify himself, and he enters into a meditative trance. And in that trance, he has a vision. And this vision gives him the insight in terms of what he needs to write. So I'd like to read some three verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 7. We'll read verses 4, 5, and 6. It will tell us about Vyasa's vision. So text 4. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service. That's bhakti yoga, linking in devotional service, without a tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his external energy, which was under his full control. Okay, that's verse 4. Verse 5. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Verse 6. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. This, again, bhakti yoga. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasa compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the supreme truth. So, three wonderful verses telling us of Vyasa's vision. What has he seen? He's seen tattva, the supreme truth. And he's seen it in terms of three. He sees the supreme personality of Godhead with his subordinate material energy personified. And he sees the living entity, you and me, the jiva souls who are bewildered by the material energy. She, in other places, she's described as embarrassed and looking down before Lord Krishna, before Lord Vishnu. And she's embarrassed because she has bewildered the living entity and caused them to forget their eternal relationship with Krishna. This is Vyasa's vision. So he sees the truth, tattvadarshi. He sees these three ontological categories. And on seeing this, he knows what he needs to do. He knows what he needs to write. He's going to write Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the activities, the pastimes, the glories of Krishna, in a way that when they hear them, the living entities will be freed of their material conditioning and their forgetfulness, and they will take up the practice of bhakti yoga, of devotional service. So, any teacher of the Veda must understand these three. Vyasa is the original guru, the teacher who sits on the seat of Vyasa, the Vyasa asana, must represent Vyasa in explaining these three principles, these three ontologies. Otherwise, if they're not understanding Vyasa, they're not understanding the Veda, and they will not be able to provide proper guidance. Unfortunately, in this world, there are More prominent are the teachers who see the world in terms of single categories or single ontologies. They see the world either as only spirit or as only matter. So the misunderstanding of everything as the single ontological category of spirit, this is called impersonalism. And the misunderstanding of seeing everything in terms of matter is voidism. So we're going to discuss these. We'll discuss them in turn. You and I, we might think that we are, well, let's say I'll say from my perspective, I might think that I'm free of these misunderstandings, but actually they can also be very subtle and even pose as obstacles to our bhakti practice, even if we know the three categories, even if we've explained them and heard them so many times. So even if we're not grossly misidentifying or misunderstanding these principles, they can still influence even our bhakti practice in subtle ways. So it's important that we reflect on these things, that we discuss them, that we engage with them. So let's begin with the first misunderstanding then, the misunderstanding that everything is spirit. As a way of understanding this or discussing this, we can actually go to the context where Lord Chaitanya is actually citing this verse from the Vishnu Purana. So it's appearing, as we said earlier, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 6, which is titled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is an example, prior to his meeting Lord Chaitanya, of this misunderstanding of seeing everything in the single ontological category of spirit or Brahman. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him after taking sannyas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri, where he met Sarvabhauma. He was there as the head priest in the Jagannath temple, as well as the Rajguru. So a very important position he had in the community because he was such a great scholar. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived in Puri, he went to see Jagannath. And when he saw Jagannath, he saw Krishna himself. And he fainted unconscious before the altar of Jagannath Swami. People thought he had died. And so the crowd gathered around him. They saw a beautiful, handsome, young sannyasi, lying lifeless. But the head priest, the royal guru, Rajguru, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he took a small piece of cotton, like cotton wool, and he held it beneath Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's nostrils, and he saw ever so slight movement, indicating the breath of life, indicating that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living, but in a very deep state of spiritual absorption, of samadhi. And so he had Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taken to his home, unconscious, carried to his home. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees arrived in Puri and they made inquiries, they found out Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at the home of Sarvabhauma. And so they went there and chanted loudly the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And they revived Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They brought him back to consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was surprised to see where he was. He was introduced to Sarvabhauma. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually had some affection for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but was also very concerned about him. He saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was too handsome and too young and too sentimental to be a sannyasi. And he was worried, how will he maintain his sannyas? And so he offered to teach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Vedanta in order that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would become more sober as a sannyasi and not faint in the temple. And so this was a service that he did. He offered to teach one-on-one classes with the greatest scholar in India. And after a week of this teaching, Sarvabhauma, he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "I've been speaking for a week. You haven't asked any questions. You haven't made any comment. Do you understand? Do you understand what I'm saying?" He was thinking that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very simple, sentimental. Maybe he doesn't understand. That's why he's not speaking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied. He said, "I understand Vedanta. But your explanations based on the teachings of Shankara, Shankara's Shariraka Bhasya, are like cloud covering the sun." He said, "Vedanta is clear like the sun, but Shankara's explanations are like clouds that cover the sun and therefore make the sun difficult to see." So what was the issue with Sarvabhauma's explanation? And how does it relate to our verse today? The issue is that Sarvabhauma did not understand these three ontological categories. He was explaining Vedanta in terms of a single category, that is Brahman, or the spiritual energy. According to this view, the only thing that exists is Brahman and all else is illusion or Maya. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. We've all heard this slogan. So this is the philosophy of Advaita, or oneness, otherwise known as Mayavad. We refer to it as Mayavad. They will refer to it as Advaita, or monism, or oneness. Mayavad, the philosophy of illusion. It says that everything is illusion. All that exists is Brahman. So the Advaitin thinks that the Godhead is formless, qualityless, that all variety, including Krishna's form, including Krishna's name, are material. And that is a great offense, aparad. The Advaitin thinks that you and I are Brahman, God. It's just that we have forgotten this due to this illusion, this Maya. Because there is only one category, Brahman or Ishvara. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he cites this verse as an evidence to Sarvabhauma. No, you must understand, there are three principles. He cites the same verse in his conversation with Prakashananda Saraswati, another great Advaitin or Mayavad leader, a guru of many, many sannyasis in Varanasi. Same verse he quotes as an evidence to try to convince Prakashananda to see things in terms of tattva, to see things more broadly, to see things in a way that is favorable for bhakti, for love, for prema. So in citing this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects this misconception that everything is a single monistic category of spirit. So let's consider the take-home messages for you and I, that if we don't understand things, these teachings in terms of these three categories, there is a possibility of a misunderstanding that will be influenced by Mayavad. Even today, there are groups where the practitioner, the followers wear Vaishnava tilak. They sing kirtan. They talk about bhakti yoga. They teach bhakti yoga. But their understanding is this single ontological category that is Advaitin or Mayavad, that everything ultimately is Brahman, that we are all God, and that these practices are ultimately material, they're just higher level material, high level sattva-guna. Use them to purify yourself and then drop them, let them go, when you realize that you are God yourself. So that's a great travesty. Because that chanting, that tilak, that sangha will not awaken prema. Well, it is not bhakti, it's a masquerade. Okay, but even this misunderstanding, even if it is not as overt, we should still be careful to not allow impersonalism to taint our bhakti in more subtle ways. Where in the name of a focus on spirit or being spiritual, we aggressively reject devotee relationships as maya, we aggressively reject other devotees. Unfortunately, this deviation is a great possibility, and many have suffered in our own movement, in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, on account of this manifestation of this impersonalistic tendency. Even in my own life towards others. We've been conditioned by these things, by these misconceptions. Overcoming them takes time. And so we need to be aware. We don't overtly identify with these misunderstandings, but at a subtle level, they may still be there. We should be conscious to overcome them. Okay, let's discuss this second misunderstanding. That is that everything is matter. This is materialism or sunyavad. The one sees everything as spirit, the other sees everything only as matter. This is all, otherwise we'll call this voidism. So materialism is the opposite side of the Advaitin misunderstanding, but it's actually the same coin. It's the same coin of a single ontology misunderstanding. This idea, this materialism idea, is very prominent in the West. So in the West, this idea that everything that exists is matter. It permeates everything. And the implications of this are that at the end of life, or that life itself or consciousness has come about on account of matter, that there is no higher meaning or purpose to life or death or the universe. Essentially, this view sees life and existence as a random chance event. And so this is nihilism or voidism. That's the implication of this. Essentially, everything is meaningless, nothingness, non-existence, existence, non-existence, they're the same thing. Ethics, virtue, God, love are all fictions, according to this view, which is a demoniac view. Krishna tells us that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, he describes the Devasura Samvad. That's the Prabhupada translates it as the divine and demoniac natures. And so I'll read a few verses from there, 7, 8, 9, and 10, where Krishna tells us of this materialistic view. In verse 7, Krishna says, "Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth are found in them." Text 8, Krishna says, "They say this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced by sex desire and has no cause other than lust." Text 9, Krishna says, "Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible acts or horrible works meant to destroy the world." This is Ugra Karma. And then in verse 10, Krishna says, "Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent." Does that not describe? Sadly, the prominent state of the attitude and the behavior in the Western world today. Not even the Western, it's more broad than that, unfortunately. So how does this apply to you and I? We must be careful about this worldview informed by teachers of the single ontological misunderstanding of sunyavad or materialism or nihilism. It's a very demoralizing and hopeless view of life and the universe. It's also a destructive view, wherein everything and everyone are perceived as mere objects for us to exploit. And we can see around us that our planet is trembling under the weight of this worldview. And we should also be careful to carefully guard our bhakti against such materialistic tendencies. Particularly, they come up for us in the name of Yukta Vairagya. That's where everything can be used in Krishna's service, as it can and should be, because it's all Krishna's, it's Krishna's energy. But we just need to be careful that we don't justify exploitation in the mood of, or under the pretext of Yukta Vairagya. But then also, yeah, also in terms of how we treat others as well. When we treat others in a way that's exploitative and dominating, that's informed by, can be informed by this Sunyavad worldview. All right, let's consider then, we've discussed why these three categories are important to understand. We've discussed two misunderstandings. One is the impersonalism, seeing everything as a spirit. The other is voidism, seeing everything as matter or materialism. Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra refers to these two problems, these single ontology worldviews. He refers to them, well, we glorify Prabhupada's pranam. We glorify Prabhupada in his pranam by saying that he has come to the West to remove, or to where the West where these worldviews are dominant or prominent. And most wonderfully and unusually, this pranam mantra is actually written by Srila Prabhupada's own hand, his own pen. His disciples understood they should glorify Prabhupada with a personal pranam mantra, but none of his disciples at the time knew Sanskrit. None were qualified to write a pranam mantra. And so Prabhupada was asked, can you give us a pranam mantra that we can chant to glorify you? And Prabhupada so kindly, so mercifully, wrote his own pranam mantra. And in it, we have Prabhupada's own vision of who he is. So he gives that to us. And what his contribution is. And what does it say? That Prabhupada is the servant of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Namaste Saraswati Deve. Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Pastachadesha Tarine. Servant of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who has come to the West full of Nirvishesh, impersonalism, and Sunyavad, voidism. And he's come with an alternative message. That is the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauravani, that he's Pracharine, that he's preaching. So Prabhupada sees defeating voidism or uprooting voidism and impersonalism by sharing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching that we have here as three ontological categories as a way to save humanity. But there is an implication to understanding these three. It's a fourth something that arises, and that is bhakti itself. If Krishna or Ishvara is the supreme Godhead, the source of all energy, Shaktiman, and material nature, Prakriti, and the jivas are his energy. And if jivas are suffering on account of having forgotten Krishna, being enamored by Maya or the material energy, then the solution given is bhakti. Bhakti will reawaken awareness of our spiritual nature as servants of Krishna. Bhakti will enable us to take that material energy and engage it in Krishna's service. So, wonderfully, when Vyas saw these three ontological categories, he also saw bhakti. He saw the principle of bhakti as well. It's mentioned in the sixth verse that we read earlier. So Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 7, verse 6, which we read earlier in the discussion of Vyasa's vision, we also had reference to bhakti. So I'll read that verse to you again. 176 of Srimad Bhagavatam says, "The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service, bhakti yoga. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled the Vedic literature, which is in relation to the supreme truth." Vyas understood clearly that bhakti is the process by which souls can be freed from forgetfulness, can be freed from the material nature. And so he explains Bhagavatam as practices. He explains within Bhagavatam practices of bhakti by which this relationship can be reawakened. It's hearing about Krishna, glorifying Krishna, remembering Krishna. That's what Sukadeva Goswami is giving to Parikshit Maharaj. All of these, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes, will awaken love for Krishna. So Vyas has compiled this Bhagavatam as a book exclusively dedicated to teaching bhakti. And what is so wonderful, Srila Prabhupada's introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam includes, and actually the bulk of it, is a summary of Lord Chaitanya's biography. He titles it, it's very nice. He titles it, "A Short Sketch of the Life and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the Preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam." And so when you read Prabhupada's introduction, the beginning part is quite short. And then the rest of it is this short sketch of the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described as the natural commentary on Vedanta, Sarvabhauma is awakened to awareness of bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Sarvabhauma, he must take Bhagavatam as the natural commentary. He must understand Vedanta through Srimad Bhagavatam. And when we follow, and we follow in that line, we will also naturally awaken bhakti or devotion for Krishna. So again, practically, how this relates to you and I. We know these three ontologies by Prabhupada's mercy. That is our good fortune. By his grace, we have come to have these three tattvas as our worldview. Our darshan of the world and of other people and of Krishna is in terms of these three. We are tattvadarshi. We see the world in these terms. Had we not received Prabhupada's grace, we too would be bewildered by single ontology misunderstandings. But by Prabhupada's mercy, we are given the vision of Vyas. We're given the vision that Krishna says is essential for teaching others about devotion, about the meaning or import of the Bhagavad Gita. And it is due to Prabhupada's commitment to sharing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings on Bhagavatam all over the world, particularly in the West, Paschadesha. Prabhupada's pranam mantra mentions Paschadesha Tarine, my obeisances to the servant of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, who has come to teach the message of Chaitanya in the Western world, where people are bewildered by Nirvishesha Sunyavad, impersonalism and voidism. When we take up the opportunity, we've received this by Prabhupada's grace, we also have an opportunity to help Prabhupada in helping others to learn about this as well. By taking up service in Srila Prabhupada's mission, we can benefit others in the same way that we have benefited. And we will also further benefit ourselves by becoming more dear to Prabhupada, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they will help us to deal with the subtle vestiges of these single ontology misunderstandings of voidism and impersonalism that still may linger in our consciousness and taint or in some way flavor our beginning practices of bhakti. As a camphor that has been kept in a box, when you remove the camphor from the box, the flavor, the smell, the fragrance may linger for some time. And so even though by Prabhupada's grace we have become aware and we have developed a darshan of Vyas, the darshan of Srimad Bhagavatam, to see the world in terms of these three tattvas, still these vestiges may linger. But by serving, by service, we get further realization, we get purification, and these vestiges can be slowly, gradually purified. These obstacles, however, to the extent to which these may pose as obstacles to our further in progress in bhakti, will be cleared. And they'll get out of the way of our awakening, pure love for Krishna. So I'll draw some conclusions. Today we've been discussing a verse from the Vishnu Purana, a verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has quoted in the Madhyalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 6, verse 154. That's our verse today. And this verse says that all things should be understood in terms of three ontological categories: Ishvara, Jiva, and Prakriti, the Supreme Lord, the living entity, and the material nature. You and I have been discussing this teaching under three headings. We discuss the significance of these three classifications or ontologies, how by seeing truth, tattva, actually means to see the world in, through the eyes of Vyas in terms of these three ontological categories. This is the basic qualification for anyone who represents Vyas. We discussed two examples of misunderstandings, single ontology misunderstandings or deviations. One was impersonalism or nirvishesh. We discussed it as Advaita Vedanta or Mayavad. And our take-home message was that even those who practice bhakti or claim to as Vaishnavas, if this misunderstanding is there, actually they are not Vaishnavas. They may have the tilak, they may have the dhoti, they may have the mantra on their lips with mridanga and kartals. But if this single ontology deviation, misunderstanding is there, it is not bhakti. It is something else. And we also discussed how this impersonalism at a subtle level may also linger in our own practice. And we should be careful of this, that we don't reject relationships with devotees, with others, or even devotees themselves, because of this misunderstanding. Okay, the other misunderstanding we discussed was sunyavad, or materialism, voidism. And we discussed how this is the dominant view in the West. It's divested any sense of meaning or purpose from people's lives. We're seeing it as an underlying cause of the destruction of the planet. And we also took warning about not allowing materialism to corrupt our own bhakti practice in the name of Yukta Vairagya, for example. Finally, our third topic was to discuss how bhakti is implied within these three classifications. Vyas and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasize that if we see these three ontological categories, or these three ontologies, we'll recognize that we as jivas, conditioned by Maya, must be reawakened to remember Krishna, the Lord of our hearts, through a practice of bhakti. And Prabhupada's mission is to share that bhakti with the world, but it also includes warning the world against impersonalism and voidism, to show people the way of bhakti. And we discussed how by Prabhupada's mercy, we have come to know these things, and how there is an opportunity for us, you and I, to further invoke his grace, his blessings upon us by helping others to learn about this and invoking Prabhupada's grace to overcome these subtle vestiges of these single ontology misconceptions that may linger and pose as obstacles to our more advanced practice of bhakti. I would like to conclude with a prayer. And for this prayer, I'll just take Prabhupada's explanation of the Maha Mantra. And when you hear this, it's an explanation Prabhupada gave at a Boston University. And when you hear this explanation, this translation, you'll hear Prabhupada's explanation of the Maha Mantra in terms of these three ontologies. This is our prayer. Oh, my dear Lord, I am your part and parcel eternally. But some way or other, I have fallen in this ignorance of material energy. Kindly lift me up to the spiritual energy. How wonderful. So thank you again for the opportunity to share with you. If you do have questions, reflections, insights, realizations that you would like to share, then please do put them in the chat. And we have a few minutes in which to discuss.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Very delighted to hear this and clarify this very philosophical part of our practice. In this regard, I would like to ask a question. For us to understand better also what we are practicing and what is the foundation of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. So in that regard, I would like to ask in the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, what is in Lord Chaitanya's philosophy the relationship between Vishnu Tattva, the supreme superior nature, and Jiva Tattva? What is the relation? If you could elaborate a bit on our philosophy.
Thank you. When I was looking at the verse, you know, there are different ways that we could go. And one of the ways would be to discuss what is the Vishnu Tattva, what is the Jiva Tattva, what is Prakriti. And that's actually going to come up in the future verses that you will read from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But thank you. Thank you for asking that, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is indeed Achintya Bheda Bheda. Oneness and difference. And the Advaitin says everything is one. The Acharyas of Ramanuja Acharya, he gives us Vashishta Advaita. Yes, everything is one, but there is distinction. Like when you see the parrot fly into the green tree, we say there is a tree. Even though there are parrots there, and we know the parrots are separate, we still say there is a tree. So that's how Ramanuja brings our attention to the distinction between the material, the Supreme Lord and his energies, the living entity and material nature. Madhvacharya is more emphatic. When you see Madhvacharya's picture, he's often holding two fingers like this, and it's not Churchill's victory signal. He's showing there are distinctions between the Lord and his energies. They are separate. So his philosophy is Dvaita, dualism, to emphasize the distinction between the Lord and its energies. The energies being the living entity and the material nature. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is more subtle. Achintya Bheda Bheda. Yes, they are inconceivably one and different. So today we've been emphasizing the distinctions and the deviation of seeing everything only in terms of oneness, that being problematic. You're asking me to give some more detail about the distinctions. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains how the Supreme Godhead is the source of all energies, and he's the Shaktiman, and we are the Shakti. So that's one important distinction. In terms of Ishvara and Jiva, both are Satchit Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna is eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge. We are also eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. We are made of the same stuff, so to speak. But Krishna's eternity, knowledge, and bliss are infinite, whereas and he is the source, whereas we are Anu, we are small. And that's how we can become forgetful and overcome by Maya. Prabhupada would give, and our acharyas give many examples, like the drop of water compared to the sea. Both are liquid and both are salty, but the sea, I'm looking out my window now, I see the Mediterranean Sea. It is boundless, so to speak, infinite compared to the drop. So we souls are like the drop. We are salty, we are liquid, but we are small. And the sea there, the ocean, is boundless. Prabhupada would also give you analogies of a gold ring and a gold mine. So these are some of the ways that the distinctions are made between Krishna and his energies. Oneness is in terms of quality. Difference is in terms of quantity. So, yeah, there's more that can be said, Juan, but there might be other comments or questions.
There's other questions, and time is short. And they there are two questions, and they relate. So people are interested. Devotees are trying to, they are asking, how can we understand the subconscious and subtle symptoms or presence of impersonalist tendencies and conditioned behavior that we might have? How can we recognize those patterns?
Yeah, thank you for that. Okay, so another way we can understand this is by looking at our Acharya's definitions of bhakti, or Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Anya bilasita sunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulena. Do you want to give us the rest, Juan? Unmute.
Anukulena Krishna nushilanam bhakti uttama.
Yeah, wonderful. Okay, so bhakti is free of the tendencies of karma and jnana. Jnana is that impersonalism. When we approach Krishna for relief from material existence, that's also impersonalism. We want to escape the material existence. We want to escape the struggles and the difficulties and the challenges and the messiness of life and dealing with other people and emotions and so on. And so we might be inspired to take to religion in order to get that escape. And we shut down to relationships and dealings with others and the difficulties that are involved in just even in service, the difficulties that are involved with existence. And so we go towards non-existence or impersonalism, where we try to shut everything down. So that's how impersonalism can very strongly influence our bhakti when our bhakti is informed by escapism or the desire for liberation or to get away from. So rather than being driven from the heart, bhakti sanjayate bhakti, bhakti is its own motive, bhakti is its own cause. But if we are being motivated or driven by a desire to escape, to be liberated, for salvation, there is a driver that is not bhakti. There is a hetu. So our acharyas, Sukadeva Goswami explains bhakti in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, ahetu ki apratiyata yayatma suprasidati. Savaipum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir adhok sajay ahetuki apratiyata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation for human society is to engage in devotional service to Krishna. The symptoms are that it is ahetuki, without any cause. It is causeless. It is its own cause. That's the other, bhakti sanjayate bhakti. So if the cause of our bhakti, is that we want liberation or that we want to enjoy material facility, then it is abhas, isn't it? It's a shadow of bhakti. So that's how bhakti can, that's how impersonalism can be there. We need to overcome that. Even if it's there in the beginning, we need to overcome that. As we serve Vaishnavas, as we serve Vaishnavas and as we try to share Krishna consciousness with others, our heart will soften. Impersonalism makes the heart hard. And we take to this dry jnana, we take to a rigid renunciation and it can be angry. Bhakti itself makes the heart soft. And as we serve Vaishnavas and as we serve other living entities, by sharing Krishna with them, our heart becomes softened. And these vestiges of impersonalism are slowly cleared away. Yeah, I hope that helped. There's so much to be said on these things, but...
Thank you. I feel more calm and soft-hearted now. Thank you.
Wonderful. The power of bhakti.
Shravanam. Shravanam Kirtanam. Thank you so much, Prabhu. We are arriving to the end of our time today.
Sure.
So I'd like to thank you in name of all the congregation, all the people who are here today, for your availability to come and speak Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Surely we'll be inspired to reflect on these topics and understand the tattva, why we are here and who is God, what is this world. Thank you so much.